Welcome everyone. It's amazing to see everybody again. This is the Rotary Club of Worldwide Impact, and we're excited to share our mission and the work that we do as part of Rotary International with all of you today. My name is Dewin, and I'm delighted to be your host for today's program. As you know, Rotary International is a global network of more than 1.4 million neighbors, friends, leaders, and problem solvers in more than 46,000 clubs around the world, all united in the common goal of making a positive impact in our communities and worldwide. As a Rotary Club, we approach every conversation as an opportunity to learn and to grow together. Our main goal is to connect with and hear from fascinating and inspiring leaders and speakers, often with a message focused on the power of ideas to change lives and ultimately to change our world. And of course, to bring a little bit of inspiration that will allow you to think about how you can make a difference as well. You may be hearing these on your favorite podcast service. Watch it on our YouTube channel, all of our social medias, and viewing it on our club website as well. If you enjoyed the program, share it with your friends, with your family, with your colleagues, and don't forget to leave a good rating and review. Today, we are pleased to have with us Ronald Kasule. He is the co-founder and the CEO of Diversity Ability Support Network System, DASUS, a social enterprise company registered in Uganda that facilitates access to assistive products and services to advance rights, choices, and opportunities for persons with disabilities. He is a childhood polio survivor, embracing an outstanding blend of disability, life experiences, and professional expertise. He has dedicated his entire life to breaking down barriers that hinder the effective participation of persons with disabilities in society and an equal basis with others. During his presentation, Ronald will share his reflections on his life after surviving polio, the several challenges that he has had to overcome in relation to education, employment, and other facets of his life, and what he's currently doing to make life easier for generations to come. So, team, sit back, relax, and get inspired through this program today. Ronald, we are extremely honored to have you with us today. The mic is yours.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much, Dewin, for the wonderful introduction. I am a disability advocate and a rights activist with lived experience of polio. I am also an alumni of the Makerere Rotary Peace Center, belonging to the inaugural cohort. I am also, you said it, the founder and CEO of DASUS, Diversity Ability Support Network System. I want to share the message of resilience and hope that life continues to thrive even after a polio diagnosis. First of all, I know Rotary has done a lot of work when it comes to polio, eradication of polio. We are very proud about the work of Rotary International. But allow me to briefly go through what is polio so that we can be at the same stage. So polio, it is short for poliomyelitis. It is a contagious viral infection caused by polio virus. It attacks the nervous system, which leads to muscle weakness and paralysis. Primarily, it affects children younger than 5 years of age, and it can lead to paralysis or even death in severe cases. There are two patterns of polio infection. One is non-paralytic, also known as abortive polio. This is just a minor illness, not involving the central nervous system, and sometimes doesn't lead to paralysis. Another one is paralytic polio. Now, this type is rare and affects about 1% of people with the condition. It may either progress to paralysis or not, but it attacks the nervous system. Now, when we talk about the paralytic case, there are three classifications depending on the site where it attacks. One is spinal polio. This affects the spinal cord. Another one is bulbar polio. This one attacks the brain stem. And then the third one is spinal polio. It affects both spinal cord, but also some parts of the brain. It attacks the two of them. Now, 79% of paralytic cases result into spinal polio. About 2% results from bulbar polio, and 19% cases result from bulbospinal polio. It is very important to note that it is possible for polio to return even after it has gone, after recovery. It can return between 15 years to 40 years of age. And this has this one, we call it the post-polio syndrome. So it brings back the pains, and it leads to deterioration of the muscle cells, the motor neurons. And this leads to a weakening of the muscles and dysfunction. And it is responsible for many deaths of many people with the polio, even prematurely. The causes: polio is highly contagious. It is transmitted mainly from person to person through infected fecal matter entering the mouth or through contaminated water and food. Unfortunately, no cure exists for polio. The aim of any treatment is to increase comfort, to speed recovery, and prevent complications, maybe the secondary disabilities, contractures, and others. The best way to prevent polio is to get a vaccination. So, according to the vaccination schedule presented by the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, children should get one dose at 2 months, 4 months, 6 to 18 months, and a booster dose between ages 4 to 6. It is also important that even when you are an adult, if you are hoping to travel within the polio risk areas or countries, you need to get a series of shots before traveling so that it can prevent, because polio can even get you even when you are an adult. So this is the polio map we have. Due to the Global Polio Eradication Initiative conducted in 1988, the regions indicated here were declared polio-free by World Health Organization. You see the Americas, Europe, Western Pacific, Southeast Asia, those were declared polio-free. There are no threats as such. Unfortunately, polio mild still affects children in parts of Africa and Asia. We are not yet free from this dangerous disease. Now, with that background, ladies and gentlemen, allow me to give you my story. I contracted polio at 3 years of age. I was 3 years. I was not, I was born a very bouncing baby. I'm a twin, by the way, with my twin sister, Nakato. We are so healthy and bouncing. I was black. My sister was very brown and very beautiful. Unfortunately, at 3 years of age, I had polio, and it was not known. So I was immunized. I was injected. I was not immunized, I think. But then when it attacked, it was not known to my mom. So she took me to an injection, which aggravated the condition and it destroyed the entire nervous system. Life changed after that. I experienced discrimination and my parents divorced. Why? Because my father was very negative about me becoming disabled. Actually, he advised mother just to find a way of killing me that maybe they will produce other children. And this was really very startling to my mother. She had to divorce him because she thought that if she remained, my father would kill me eventually. So to protect me, she had to divorce. And I grew up with a single mother struggling to look after me with my disability alongside my other siblings, seven of them. Challenges. I had very many challenges. Remember, I had tested the beauty of walking, the beauty of being a normal child. And that went suddenly. So I started experiencing muscle weaknesses. All the muscles I had started wasting away. Orthopedic issues. I started to develop contractures because of lack of use of some of my limbs. So when you don't use, contractures come. I also had challenges with the difficult with activities of daily living. Because of the attack, I lost control of the nervous system. Actually, mother used to tell me that one thing I could do was just blinking. She stayed in a hospital for 6 months trying to make sure that I recover until the doctors set her aside and told her, look here, mom, Ronald will never walk again. And there is nothing that we can do to bring him back. But the only advantage is that he's a child, he's very young. So every year, Ronald will just regain ability slowly and slowly. So they advised her that she should get back home and start looking after me, providing exercises, providing a balanced diet, and that I must never lack salt because that was going to be so important for calcium, for my bones. And she really paid heed. So apart from the physical challenges that I faced, I also faced emotional and psychological challenges. Grief and loss. This was not for me only, also to my family. You can imagine your child, you know, losing ability all of a sudden. So that was very grieful and it was a loss. But also to me, because I had tested walking, you know, you become all of a sudden immobile. That was very dangerous. Body image, you just realize your body is different from others. And that can really erode your self-esteem and confidence. Depression and anxiety, because you don't know, you cannot imagine what your future is going to be. You don't know what's going to be. Am I going to be killed? Or how am I going to know? You see your siblings going to school, you know, they are busy, you remember what you used to do, and that is the time of depression and anxiety. Social isolation, I experienced all this. I could no longer move around to join my siblings for play. Before I developed this, I used to take calves to graze. I used to support my mother with activities, household chores. It went all of a sudden. So I had to be psychologically challenged how to adjust to new realities that has come my way. But I also, even when I was young, at that very early age, I had now to start thinking about advocacy and self-advocacy in order to be involved. Sometimes I never thought about how challenging my situation is. I very much pushed so that I would to be allowed to participate alongside my siblings. For example, because I didn't know, one thing that my mother helped to establish was a very conducive environment at home for me, both physically and the psychological environment, to the extent that apart from the fact that I was immobile, I never thought that I was a person with disability in terms of activity limitation. One time when I realized my siblings were going to school, every day they were running to school. Every day, because I was growing up so fast, when they would come back, they would discuss with me what they learned at school. Then one time I confronted my mom. I asked her, "Mom, why is it that I'm not going to school like my siblings?" She told me, "Ronald, you cannot go to school. You have a disability. You cannot walk. How will you go to school?" I thought I needed to go to school, so I insisted. I wanted to go to school. She never argued. She said, "Okay, tomorrow morning, wake up very early like your siblings and prepare you to go to school." I never slept that day, that night, because I was thinking how my first day to school was going to be. Very early, I also woke up. My siblings prepared very fast, took breakfast and ran to school. I took breakfast and I started crawling to school. It was very far. And the road was not accessible, full of stones. I crawled. No sooner had I completed, even reached the main road, it started raining. It rained on me. I lost my book. I returned home. So the bitter truth was, I accepted, "Mom, that I was not able to go to school." So I was satisfied in a way, because she never refused me to try. I realized the fact that sincerely I had limitations. Other challenges, I grew up from a very humble family background. My mother never went to school. I think stopped in primary 3. And one can say she was illiterate. She worked in the garden. She worked the land for us to get what to eat, to support, and also for my siblings to go to school. So this meant a lot in terms of what assistive devices I was able to access and what other support we could afford as a family. But also other challenge, lack of equal opportunities to participate. This especially came not from the family, but later when I started, I got the opportunity to go to school. Sometimes I remember a time when I had completed, I got support to go to Kampala School for Physically Handicapped. This was a school, special school. I started, I got a first grade. It was my long dream to be fulfilled to go to secondary school. I got a government scholarship to go to secondary school. My first day when I reported, they admitted me without knowing my situation. So my first day when I reported to school, the head teacher withdrew the offer, arguing that I was disabled, I could not manage in the school, that they didn't have any support for me. And because of that, the school was an advanced school, I would bring down the standard of the school. Although Mama counter-argued, it was to no avail. I had to miss school for 3 years after my primary because I didn't have where to study from. Physical barriers, inaccessible environment, everywhere. In Uganda and Africa in general, the infrastructure is not yet inclusive. So society is configured in such a manner that person with disabilities cannot effectively participate. Negative attitudes and low expectations. Even when I studied so hard, my mother used to tell me that, "Ronald, you have a disability. You have to study very hard. When you study very hard, the knowledge you will get, the skills, the expertise will compensate for your physical abilities. You will get a good job, and then you will be able to look after yourself." I worked hard and got even a first class degree, but I struggled getting a job. They would recruit me, shortlist me, but when you show up, you have a disability, people have no experience of working with persons with disabilities. They think they have low expectation from you. Even before they give you a chance, they look at your disability. So these were so much challenging. How did I overcome obstacles? My mother as a hero. I call her the native therapist because that time when I was young, it was very hard to access rehabilitation therapy services. But my mother, illiterate as she was, she had to really actively support me. She gave me all the exercises. That time I would not even sit upright. I would just lie down. But she trained me. She used to tie me on the banana plantations. She created scaffolds for me to stand, to train me how to sit independently. She used the bencinis, and I was able. She also, at that younger age, created opportunities for me to participate. For example, she made sure that I do the dishes even when I was at that age. Little did I know that was preparing for me for the future independence. And indeed, when I gained the ability to sit, she involved me in all the activities alongside with my siblings. And that was preparing me enough. I used to cook, she allowed me, she would make, prepare the food and tell me, Ronald, I'm going to the garden, but I want you to stay and look after that food. Make sure you keep the fire burning, and if water is finished, you add. And I started learning. We used to live in rural communities with no access to assistive devices. But later, she also tirelessly lobbied for support. And later I got my first wheelchair. I think I was 14 years. That's when I got my first chair. She also made the environment at home very accessible for me, creating for me my special bed, very accessible, making sure that every place at home was modified for me, but also give me emotional support, counseling me and now and again, maintaining a healthy lifestyle, giving me exercises that I had. Later, we pushed, so I got access to education. I was already old, an old boy, you know, around 12, 14 years when I started school. In all this, I also mastered the art of being patient and self-compassion. I was very patient because many times I interacted with different people. Others rejected me forthwith. But I never, you know, used to give a damn. I knew what I wanted and I was patient. For people, especially people who never knew how talented in a way I was very patient with them until they appreciated me. But also continuous learning and adaptation. One thing I want to tell you when you get a disability, sometimes you don't know how it is going to be. You yourself, you don't know. But now you continuously learn and adapt to different environments. And also networking and community engagement. As I grew up, I sought opportunities to network. I learned that there are organizations of persons with disabilities, and that I needed to engage with them so that I can learn the different, how other persons with disabilities were doing. Because when you are at home, when I used to be at home, I thought in the world, I was the only person with a disability. Live these days when we have internet, when you can see around the world. But that time you can think you are the only person in the world with a disability. And then you wonder what happened. Despite my challenges, physical challenges as a result of polio, I was able to focus. It was not an obvious journey for me to access education, because sometimes I say, maybe it was God who paved the way for the reason. Because my earlier effort to go to school were thwarted because of the fact that the school were very far from home. I had no assistive devices. I could not crawl to go to school. So I gave up. But then the civil war came, and all of us ran away. I was taken to the into custody of my maternal uncle, who was a teacher living within the school quarters. So when I was taken there, so little I used to live within the school premises. And you can imagine what I had desired for a long time had turned up unexpectedly. Straight away, I requested that I go to school. So I went, I started the school. I was very smart. I even skipped classes. I started in primary two. Why? Because my siblings had done a lot of work at homeschooling. I was very smart. So primary two, and I was always the first until Action Aid, another civil society organization, was approached by mother. They came, gave me a wheelchair. I had no wheelchair when I was in primary. I was growing. So they gave me a wheelchair. They thought I would benefit from rehabilitation. From the theater results showed that I could not. So they gave me a wheelchair and took me to a school. I went to secondary, and for university, I started with a diploma in community-based rehabilitation. When I was a child, I thought I wanted to be a lawyer. But when I saw the challenges disabled persons go through, I thought I didn't want to be a lawyer. I wanted to be to work within the communities, to address the community challenges, to effect, to be a role model within the communities. So I opted to go and do a diploma in community-based rehabilitation of Chambogo University. This was a strategy in community development, which aims to create opportunities for persons with disabilities within the communities. From there, I also had to do a bachelor's degree in adult and community education of Makerere University. I got the opportunity to go to the UK and did a master's in educational planning, economics, and international development. Later, I did a postgraduate diploma in peace, conflict transformation, and development of Makerere Rotary Peace Center. Why? This was very important. I experienced the war in Uganda, but also as I grew up, I noted that these wars, situation of conflicts, create disabilities and also find persons with disabilities. But even during the post-conflict periods, persons with disabilities are not consulted in designing programs. They are not catered for. I thought there was a very huge gap that needed to be addressed. So I sought for a Rotary scholarship to go and do this diploma in conflict transformation and development. I also did a postgraduate certificate in sustainable development and global justice. This was from University of Antwerp in Belgium. I added a postgraduate certificate in social protection and inclusion of persons with disability from University of Applied Science of Bonn Rhein Sieg in Germany, and a postgraduate certificate in inclusive leadership development from University of Georgia in the USA. When I graduated from Chambogo University with a community-based rehabilitation, a diploma in community-based rehabilitation, I became the community-based rehabilitation worker, working with Cheshire Services Uganda. I loved this because part of my role was to go to the communities, identify persons with disabilities early enough so that they would benefit from early interventions, but also working with the parents and the other civil society organizations to create opportunities for these children to go to school. Later, I co-founded companies and civil society organizations. We had Access for Action in Uganda, which we call Act for Uganda, and Aginsiba. I made sure I wanted to explore and create opportunities for persons with disability and the mainstream communities to appreciate persons with disabilities. Later, I went internationally and worked for International Disability Alliance in Geneva. My role was to support and to explore the participation of persons with disabilities in development policies and programs, especially in the Global South. Currently, part of my work is with the United Nations Population Fund, the Uganda Country Office. I'm supporting the country office to integrate the interests of persons with disabilities to help them design disability inclusive programs. I am also a founder and CEO of DASANS, like you introduced me. I particularly conceived this, and I love this so much, when I was a Peace Fellow with the Makerere Literary Peace Center. This was part of my social change initiative. Because I was doing, and I was out of the field studies, I realized persons with disabilities, but also other agencies needed support, especially accessing support, care support services for persons with disabilities. I thought, yes, this was going to be my social change initiative, but I wanted to carry it forward as an organization to continue building capacity and also providing services. Other significant personal victories, I was given the opportunity in form of a professional fellows program on inclusive disability employment. This was sponsored by the US State Department to go to the US and learn from the US context in terms of supporting persons with disabilities. So I learned a lot, and this increased my activism in disability. I have also been highly trained by the International Disability Alliance and the International Disability and Development Consortium in partnership with the African Development, African Disability Forum and CBM on how to advocate for persons with disabilities. I am currently also the country representative for the Smart City for All Country Representative under the Global Initiative on Inclusive Information and Communication Technologies. Every year, I am a speaker on disability and assistive technology during the Inclusive Africa Conference, which is hosted in Nairobi. I am also a trainer of the trainee facilitator on inclusive social protection for national organizations of persons with disabilities in Uganda. I am also the main focal person for Africa on the thematic group on disaster risk reduction and climate action. This was established by the stakeholder group of persons with disabilities on sustainable development to advise the UN on disaster risk reductions. When I reflect back their lessons, the first lesson is resilience, being resilient. There are many obstacles along the way that, you know, would always come. But are you resilient enough to come back after you are bogged down by a particular situation? How are you resilient to come back? But also determination. You have to be determined. Like I told you, I dropped out of school after my primary level. But I know my mom had categorically told me that, Ronald, if you get education, you'll get all. And disability will not be a barrier. I was determined to do this. Even when I dropped out, other people came to me, say, Ronald, now we are taking you to shoemaking. I said, no, I want to go to school to continue my education. And things worked out. Important also, keeping a positive mindset. Not now to be, self-pity, to be drowned in self-pity. You have to be positive. Things will be okay. You have to keep going. So these key lessons, they are few, but very important, and have been so meaningful, and have made me what I am today. Now, my advocacy and the impact, right from when I started, I wanted to be a voice of the voiceless, to speak for those who may not have the opportunity, but also to be a source of power, to empower others, including children with disabilities, to have a role model. Because I already told you, when I was growing up, I thought I was the only person with disability in the whole world. So I didn't know people with disability existed. And also, as you grow up as a child with a disability, you need to see, to have examples of successful models. This, I wanted to do this, but also for mothers, Many times when I was working as a community rehabilitation workers, I got cases where mothers were wanted to kill their children. Children who had very minor disability compared to me. Why? Because they had a disability. So I wanted to empower them, to give them hope. But also, I continue to advocate for accessibility and inclusion of persons with disabilities on an equal basis with others. Yes, part of my advocacy, that's why I insisted that, yes, diverse disability support network system is very dear to me, because as I grew up throughout my education, throughout my employment, there has been one almost insurmountable challenge, the challenge of having no support system. Uganda and Africa at large, we depend on our families and friends for support, for care support. So if you want to go to school, you need support, you must have someone to support you. If you get a job, again, you need a family member to support me, to support you. Unfortunately, this is not how things are done. Like myself, I was the last born. All my siblings were grown up, and no one would provide support. Partly why I dropped out of school, because there was no support. I struggled getting employment because employers kept saying that there was no support for me. They couldn't employ me. But also, we work with organizations with very strict policies. They can't employ you and employ you with a sibling. So I thought we needed to establish a professional care support services to support the inclusion of persons with disabilities in education, in health sector, in employment, and everywhere. So without leveraging on assistive technologies, dozens leverage on assistive technologies to provide digital access to professional care support services for persons with disabilities, but also to for organizations that are supporting and that have a will to support persons with disabilities. There are very many persons with disabilities. In Uganda only, we have over 7 million. And in East Africa, 16 million persons living with disabilities. And in Africa, it is estimated that we have 135 million persons with disabilities. One of my vision is to make DASANS, the platform, continental, connecting persons with disabilities and civil society and organization or development partners to care support services and also to assistive technologies. I told you before that I got my first wheelchair when I was almost 14 years of age. This could have come earlier. But even when my family could have mobilized resources to afford one, we didn't know where to go to buy one. And this is still a challenge even. So we want to develop DASANS as a marketplace, so that a person with disability know where to buy this wonderful assistive technology. Technologically, the world has moved on. There are many assistive technologies that can really make any disability, any type of disability, less effective. But where to buy them is a challenge, especially in Uganda and in Africa. This is our dream. Our mission as DASANS is to promote inclusive socio-economic development through facilitating access to professional care support services and assistive technologies to advance rights, choices, and opportunities for persons with disabilities. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Ronald, thank you so very much. What a meaningful lesson of resilience, determination, and positive impact. I'm completely inspired by your presentation, and I'm related. I'm so delighted to just the fact of listening to you this morning. It's completely inspiring and really motivating for all of us. Thank you so much for your presentation, and especially sharing your story and inspiring us to continue strengthening our mission to eradicate polio and see how we can contribute to bring impact to and to address this matter. I'm looking forward to hearing from our audience. If you have any questions, please raise your hand by clicking the reaction icon in the webinar, and let's have us a small Q&A and discuss a little bit more about your story and the impacts that Dasens is currently doing. I would really like to kickstart this part and ask a little bit more about what inspired you to co-found Dasens.
So thank you, Darwin, for the question. What inspired me? So what inspired me actually was part of my journey. So one, I struggled so much in school. I was turned away by head teacher complaining that they didn't have support for me. They wanted my mother to remain at school to support me, but my mother could not. She had responsibility at home. She was taking care of other people. So that was practically impossible to stay in school. I dropped out of school because there was no someone to support me. Later, even when I was at university, I had a boy. The university used to pay the support persons. So I had this boy who used to support me at university. So one day I told him I wanted to go to the US embassy. I had an appointment. So very early in the morning, we prepared, we went. Now, when we reached on the way, he told me he wanted to ease himself. So he left me somewhere. I told him to go to one of the nearby hall. He ran back home. So he left me stranded and disappeared. When he disappeared, I called someone for me to continue because I was a networker. So that means I had very many people in my network. So I called someone to come so I don't miss my appointment. I proceeded. When I got back, I realized the boy had disappeared with my ATM card. So he went and withdrew all the money that was in the bank. So long story, so I also realized that not only that there are no people to support, but also the people who were supporting were unprofessional. And yet we really needed to work with the professional people. People who support person with disability get into their privacy so much. So they really needed to be professional to keep our privacy, but also to support us very well in education, in employment. So I thought no one would do this because there is a saying that who wears the shoe knows where it pinches. So I knew very well where the shoe pinched. The biggest problem was lack of a professional care support services. So I thought I needed to start. I didn't know how to start, but I thought I needed to start. I needed to find somebody who was an expert in technology because that is not my background. So we co-founded this because of the challenge, the lived challenge of lack of support.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Ronald, for sharing this insight with us. We also have a question from our president, Patrick. And the question is, could you please indicate how many persons with disability are currently supported by your organization?
Okay, so we have had a very humble beginning because I told you at one point I went to the US on a fellowship. So when I came back, they advertised for Alumni Impact Award. It was small money. So I had already gotten the inspiration from Rotary Peace Center. I wrote this project and they gave me $2,000. That was enough for me and my colleague to begin. So we started building this. In 2020, we got organization of person with disability together. We pitched them because we wanted a person with disabilities different person with disabilities. I have polio, physical disability, but we have other person with disability, other impairments, hearing impairment, mobility impairment, visual impairment, and others. And we are facing the same challenge. So we organization, person with disability, they loved this so much. So to answer your question, so far, we have 215 users of these support services. We have 45 professional care support services that we have trained ourselves. So when I say training, we don't technically train them because we have universities training them. We have like a Chambogo University every year passes out people, sign language interpreters, mobility guides, but you know, no one knows where they go. They disappear because they also can't find work. This DASANS has really created a platform for them. When they graduate, they are able to join. And whoever wants to access them, they just also create accounts on our platform and they access these people to provide services. So our training is professional in nature. Because we know, yes, you might have been trained to provide sign language interpreters, but are you professional enough? So for us, we provide that training, the etiquette, disability etiquette, the do's and don'ts on disability.
Absolutely, absolutely. You are 100% right. And I'm so delighted to see the connection with Rotary and how everything started. That's really, really meaningful. Thank you for sharing that with us. Our colleague Kelly also have a very, very nice question. She says, thank you for sharing your life journey and your lived experience with polio. You mentioned that the infrastructure in Uganda and broader Africa is not organized in an inclusive way. What changes have you seen regarding infrastructure in the past years? Has progress been made and how can these be pushed forward?
Okay, so thank you so much. The question is really very nice. When I was going to school, it was a disaster. I remember when I reached senior six, I had to go into boarding section, but I deliberately starved myself. I could not eat. I skipped meals because I never wanted to go to toilet. The toilets were not accessible. It required me to move from a wheelchair to go and crawl into the toilet for me to access the toilet. And that meant the toilet was very dirty. It was a nightmare. So because I had a passion to study, to complete my school, I skipped meals, literally starving myself so that I skip going to the toilet. I would only eat on weekends when I traveled back home. I used to go back home every weekend to freshen up, take a bath. I could not bathe at school because the system were not conducive. That was one of my haunting questions when I was in primary, because I was in Kampala School for Physically Handicapped. That was accessible because it was for persons with disabilities. But my haunting question was, Where will I go for secondary school? Because the schools are not accessible. I'm happy to note that the situation is changing. There are many policies because of our increased advocacy. Many policies. The universal primary education policy categorically stipulates that persons with disabilities must access mainstream schools. So many changes are made. We really advocate, but we also sue public institutions that are not accessible. So that also has created some kind of positive attitudes. So we have a very strong disability movement in Uganda that's working jointly to push the interests of persons with disabilities. And there are many improvements, but still, a lot remains to be desired.
Great. Wow, that's very important. Thank you, Ronald, for sharing these important highlights. And we do understand how important infrastructure is. And there are so many variables to consider. And this is very important to think about further. I would really like to close this Q&A with one more question for you, Ronald. I think we would like to spend more time with you talking about your mission and your vision of for Dazzens. But I believe we're really interested to hear how we can get engaged with your organization and what are the proposed projects for next year. What are the next steps for you and see how we can explore possibilities of collaboration?
One thing I didn't mention from the previous question about the infrastructure, I didn't mention about the infrastructure in terms of technology, like assistive technologies. While the world is moving very fast with the technology, Uganda and Africa, they are on another side. Many of the assistive technologies that they are supporting our colleagues in the developed world to live independent lives are not available in Africa, in Uganda and Africa. Like I always tell, I am here, I use a power chair. I use a power chair because my hands and my lower and upper limbs are not strong enough to push a manual chair. Otherwise, I would need someone over to be on my side every now and again to push me. But because of my global interaction, I was able to get a chair, and this has really increased my independent living. I can literally do everything, go where I want, and without struggling. So what Dasans wants to do, we started first with the aim of providing access to professional care support services. While we have achieved this, we are achieving this again and again. People are asking us, where can we get a power chair? Where can we buy a white cane? Can I get a hearing aid? What can I do with this? So I realized, oh, this is also part of the problem in Africa. Also, it brings to my mind the fact that I got my first wheelchair when I was almost 14 years of age. What most important time of my childhood that was wasted? What I was supposed to accomplish as a child, I never, because I didn't have the opportunity to move around. So I say, how can Dasans also venture into assistive technology manufacturing locally here in Africa? We have wonderful artisans that can design so that we can also give an opportunity to talented people to an opportunity to innovate, to be creative and innovate in the area of disability, assistive technology. So this is something very important that we are thinking about, that we want to establish. And I'm very happy when you talk about the possibilities of collaborating. I know, Rotary, you have really played a very key role in eradicating polio, fighting polio. Yes, prevention is there, but also there are some of us who are already got, who are already victims of polio, and we really need support to participate effectively. So I thought if we can work on a project of assistive technology together, I think that would be a very wonderful project to accomplish so that we further push the mission and push those people who are affected by polio and other impairments to effectively participate in their respective communities.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you so much, Ronald. What a great way to close this program with this important statement. And we believe in the power of collaboration and the impact that we all can do in so many different ways. As you mentioned, Rotary has been focusing across so many years to achieve and strive in our mission. Wow, I have learned so many things today, team. Thank you, everybody, for your engagement and for joining today's program. If you're inspired to get involved and make a difference in your community, we invite you to learn more about Rotary the work that we're currently doing, and of course, to learn more about the Rotary Club of Worldwide Impact. With that said, I want to thank again to Ronald for sharing with us his inspiring story, the work that he's doing, and of course, to each of you for making an impact in each of your communities, in all the places that we are across the globe. With that said, thank you, team. Once again, Ronald, we appreciate so much you being here with us. And with that said, thank you, everybody. And Ronald, everybody, see you in the next time. Thank you all.
Thank you. Bye-bye.